Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for the benefit of the Five Eyes agencies who just can't get a job doing anything else, apparently. My very special guest, Alex. It is Piri, isn't it?
It is, yes.
Okay, so it's not Parai. No. That's right, you're not a pariah. So we wanted to get into this essentially straight away. So if you wouldn't mind, please, with the listening audience, just tell us a little bit about who you are, what it is you do, and a little bit about the hope for Alex. Give a little page.
Okay, well, in terms of activism, I got involved a little bit in uni with student marches in the UK when they have their grants issues back in the 90s. And then from there, coming back to New Zealand to work, I got a job as an English language teacher. And a lot of the conditions in those schools, particularly at that time, were really ropey in terms of working conditions and pay. So I sort of got involved with Unite Union, who helped us set up a branch at our school. And they did quite well for several language schools, especially in Auckland. And then from there, I moved on to causes because, you know, lots of people in that organization really big on causes. And for example, Fair Size My Pay. I can't remember the name of the campaign now. And Asset Sales, where I think I was on several marches, one of which you led, I believe. Yeah, down Queen Street.
Yeah, what's his name? Like Johnny Cash. I've been everywhere, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so I remember you leading that very well and very vocally, so that was a good one. And other things I've become involved in over the years is helping refugees settle into New Zealand. And I was involved for a while with growing the quota number, which recently has been agreed to. So that was a good result for them. And so I was involved with the Auckland Resettled Community Coalition while I was in Auckland. I now live in Rotorua, so that's more online now. So over the years, I've been involved in lots of issues and social justice. Also interested in mental health issues as well. Because as a sufferer myself, I have a lot of empathy for other people going through that. Try and help out people where I can on a more informal basis. But still, I've been able to help some friends and other people. So that's really satisfying.
Mm.
And I've been down in Rotorua for nearly 2 years, still teaching English, but also helping out with Love Soup, which is a homelessness organization, which helps with meals and also settling people into housing. So that's something I really believe in. They started up in Auckland, I believe, but they've got branches around the country now. So that's what I'm looking at, as well as involvement with Action Station, helping out with a few things voluntarily. And recently got involved with Organize Aotearoa, which is a new movement, basically lobby and change the system for the better, which is something a lot of us believe in, that the system isn't working for New Zealanders as a whole.
Mm.
Yeah. So that brings me up to speed with some of the social activism stuff I've been involved in over the years, since mainly 2005, 2006.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, it seems to be the same thing for me. And going back from those years, and in fact, Joe Carolyn and John Nato,
yes,
and all those cats at Unite Union were some of the first people I was involved with filming,
yeah,
and doing protests and activism and that kind of thing. And now it's a lot more studio based and kind of doing a lot of the technology work and what have you,
yes,
doing those shortcuts. Because I don't know, I figured it out that protesting in and of itself is actually a consent. It's, we'll let you do it, but we don't like what you're doing.
Yes. So it's on their terms, mostly.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the problem that I kind of had with it. It was like beating your head against a brick wall. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, coming out with a show of force and people together, it feels really good. You know, you get a big oxytocin hit in your brain with everybody mm-hmm. around you agreeing with you and having fun and chanting and laughing and that kind of thing. But then I found that the most important thing was the commentary on the video afterwards was actually the most important thing, because when you're at a protest or something of that nature, all you can hear is these chants, da, 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 they repeat themselves, they repeat themselves. Some of them are repetitive chants that have been repeated for like 20, 30 years or something.
Yeah.
Who's got the power? You know, it's just like, oh, you're changing the paradigm, are you, bro? Like,
exactly, yeah. You don't know how effective they are sometimes, eh?
Yeah, I mean, and I think maybe the media's job is to ensure that people get discouraged from going to protest in the first place by, you know, just by virtue of the fact that they don't get any coverage most of the time, and if they do get coverage, soundbite, mischaracterization, demonization, end of story.
Exactly, yeah. So they downplay numbers and say how aggressive people were, and it's like, if you're there, it's quite different.
Well, that's the nature of reality itself, is it not? You know, it's surprising that people who know what they're talking about say different things to the media, you know?
Yes, exactly.
I wonder why that is. It's almost like they arrived after the fact and just picked some random fuckwit out and then interviewed them and got all their information from there and then didn't verify it with any of the people who actually led the protest or were holding the megaphones or the microphones. I don't know the process of journalism anymore. I just don't. It's fucking perplexing.
Yeah. Very
So, after, and naturally, no good deed goes unpunished. So after all of your self-sacrifice and getting in all of these causes, what happens? Yep. You get hit with a health difficulty. Could you please explain this one for us, Dan?
Okay. Well, to put it delicately, I suppose, I've had IBS symptoms for many years, which I've got used to managing. It's not very pleasant, but, you know, supposedly not lethal.
Sorry, can you define that?
Irritable bowel syndrome.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which is yucky and unpleasant, but usually not dangerous for your health, just uncomfortable. So I had that for many years, but in about August last year, things started to change. Like, it became much more intense, much more uncomfortable, much more horrible bloating feelings. So we went to the doctor once, and they said, oh, it's just a bad flare-up of your IBS, and so we went away, didn't clear, went back, same thing. Went back for a third time and insisted something happen. And I said, oh, okay, we'll give you a colonoscopy if you want. You had one last year, there was nothing in there, but we'll give you one for peace of mind. So we said, okay. But then a few days later or a week later, it was becoming so uncomfortable. My wife said, oh, this is not on. It took me to the ED, where they gave me a thorough investigation. And they surmised that the swelling wasn't gas, but liquid. It's called ascites around my abdominal organs. And usually that's a sign of something serious. So from there, the investigations continued and ramped up, you know, trying to eliminate, like, it could be a weird bug or some kind of thing. But then cancer came up more and more. And eventually I had some exploratory surgery to have a look at what was going on. They took a biopsy at the same time. And eventually that came back with the incurable cancer diagnosis. So I've been on chemo ever since. And luckily that seems to be pushing it back a bit, but my prognosis is pretty uncertain at this stage. I look and feel quite well at the moment, so I'm making the most of life, doing as much as possible. And I want to continue that for as long as I can. And if possible, at some stage, beat this bastard.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, That's the Give a Little page, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who are listening online, is just down in the description and also on the screen in front of you, givealittle.co.nz/cause/hope-for-Alex. And they're hoping to raise, how much exactly is it there? I'll just double check the website. So far, there's been $15,411 from 188 generous donors. Yeah. And ultimately, really cool. What was it? We need $60,000 for treatment. Now, I take issue with the health system for a number of reasons, and the treatment of cancer and its practice thereof, principally among them, because a lot of the times people aren't necessarily dying of cancer, they're actually dying of the chemo. You know, it's like kills 96% of the people who take the chemo, and yet cancer only kills about 70% of people who don't treat it. You know, It's like, well, hold on a second. Your survival rate's dropping here when you. I'll actually put somebody in the shit right now. But Marky Herbert from the Legalized Cannabis Party, she's selling Marky's remedies and things of that nature, and sending them through the post. And I just saw an email from her to somebody who reached out to the party and asked, is there anything he can do for his sick nana who wants to get over her cancer and want have something to deal with the nausea of the chemo and all of this kind of stuff. And she sent this email and I was like blown away. They had all these beautiful products and things of that nature. And I'm reminded again, one last person from the Legalized Cannabis Party, the former joint leader, Jeff Lai, he got sick of the health system. And that's actually kind of why he joined the party, because he was lying in a bed in full view of everybody else, you know, with problems with his rectum and cancer and that kind of thing. And he felt really dehumanized. He felt really exposed. Right. And when he went home, he started juicing his cannabis plants, whole plant, just through the juicer and just drinking that liquid. And after a short time period, that cancer was gone. It immediately relieved his symptoms, and he had to rub it on his anal area as well, some of that liquid, and it all cleared up, and he cured himself. You know, and this is what's being kept from the people of New Zealand, and I see people like yourself suffering needlessly because the medical establishment refuses to learn facts.
Yes, hopefully that's changing, but we don't know how much will change with a referendum coming up.
Well, you always wonder, like, is it worth waiting? I mean,
yes,
are laws worth following if they are themselves immoral?
Yeah, because there's that meme going around, like a lot of things were legal that were patently immoral. So justice isn't the same as legality.
In point of fact, I just saw... Oh, no, it's actually not entirely relevant, but I just saw a letter from the police to somebody on Facebook, and it said... You admitted that these were your plants, and so I'm going to give you a formal warning for cultivation, and so which would normally have an imprisonment of up to 7 years, right? So, so up to 7 years, and somebody got off with a warning, right? That sets somewhat of a fucking precedent, right? What's the culture of the police turning into in this country? Is it improving, you know, that kind of thing? And do cancer patients truly have something to fear from the police anymore? And could they come out and say something along those lines?
Yeah. There's some sort of grey area from what I've been looking at, because the they are looking seriously at changing the law. So there seems to be a bit of a grey area for cancer and terminally ill patients.
Well, indeed, the legislation specifically for terminally ill patients has just been lifted, and it's past the 12-month margin. So if you have anything that is classified as terminal, they say, hey, you can get cannabis now and that kind of thing. However, it's the pharmaceutical cannabis, the stuff that you have to pay $500 a dose for, as opposed to growing a free plant.
Yes, I know. Yeah, so it's very helpful to have helpful friends.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is if you are in a situation where if you've spent your life gathering street credit, not money, but street cred, right?
Yeah.
Doing nice things, doing the right thing,
yeah.
That kind of, you'll find that sometimes in your time of need, people are there for you.
Exactly. And that's what I've been very lucky with in this time. Lots of people I've never met but built up relationships on social media with have been really, really supportive. So I really thank them a lot.
Mm. So thinking about this, I mean, I hate to bring up the word legacy.
Yes. Yeah. I have been thinking about that.
Yeah. Can you tell me your thoughts?
Well, I'm still doing bits and pieces because I stopped work in October when this all got serious. But now that the symptoms are manageable, to keep myself busy and occupied and positive, I still like to keep involved with things like Action Station and OA and other things that come up informally. So, yeah, I'd sort of like my legacy to have helped. Sounds very contrived, but left the world a better place in some way than when I arrived, even if it's in a small, localized way.
Mm. So, well, it's kind of the only thing everybody's obliged to do in their life, is slightly improve things around you.
Yeah, but not everyone does.
Mm. In fact, most people don't.
Mm. Yeah,
almost nobody does, in fact.
Yeah. Well, because of things like neoliberalism and the system being the way it is, we've got people encouraged to be atomized individuals. So it's all about the individual and maybe the few people they care about around them. But a lot of people aren't focused on community and social goods anymore, I notice.
Mm-hmm.
There are plenty of us who are, but we're sort of in a little pigeonhole according to mainstream media and society.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And at the same time, you know, you see all sorts of resistance movements come against all forms of tyranny throughout the entirety of history. And half of them are frickin' made up by the tyrants themselves just to distract people from the people who are doing the real work, you know. And that's what's deeply problematic about trying to, what was it Two-Face said, trying to be a decent man in an indecent time. It's kind of like the odds are sort of stacked against you in a lot of ways. And indeed, that whole community spirit and what have you, the community is only really made up of individuals, and it's what a man does, or a woman for that matter, that actually makes that community better. It's not what the community does in general. It's what the community does in the aggregate. So it means each individual has to contribute. Each individual has to do something. And if they do not play their part, the community itself falls apart.
Yeah, fragments. Yeah. And that even shows with infrastructure and things. People are isolated because when new communities are built, they're isolated. You need a car or some kind of transport. And so you're not encouraged to communicate with other people outside your basic needs, work or family or whatever it is.
Mm. Mm. Well, it's just like the less mobility somebody has, and this is what I've been rather pissed off with the council lately, is they're ruthlessly implementing Agenda 21. You know, get everybody in those little slave block apartments right next to the railroad tracks.
Yeah.
They're going up every... I see, there's nothing I can see but slave blocks and cranes in the skyline anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's terrifying, it's frightening that people want to live like that, as compressed rabbit hutches, vertical rabbit hutches for humans. This is not the way humans are supposed to live.
No, but that's the trend, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a deliberate trend, and they're shutting down extra lanes of traffic and all of that kind of stuff. Now, the lack of social mobility, I think, is actually tied inextricably to real mobility. So if you've got a car, your social mobility has an opportunity to go up a hell of a lot more than perhaps somebody who doesn't have a car, right?
Yeah.
So if you've got slave block apartments where nobody can own a car because there ain't any parking spaces, and all the parking spaces that there are incredibly expensive ones that are owed to like private companies and things like that are all contracted out to the council, who are clipping the ticket every single time everybody does anything in the entire city, and you get stuck in traffic, which is being deliberately hiked up by building all these cycle paths which nobody use. I've never seen in my life a cyclist using a cycle path. It's inextricable, but I've seen lots and lots of traffic right next to cycle paths that could fit a car and an entire line of traffic.
Yes.
And it's like, okay. There is a much deeper thing at play here. Where these people aren't playing around. They've got all the billions of dollars of like local council money hocked into them. They've got the Business Roundtable Group, the Committee for Auckland, the New Zealand Infrastructure, and a number of other roundtable groups that have essentially just seized control of society. I mean, I'm not talking about just Auckland. I'm talking about society. So this is the new elite, essentially. The elite is unelected bodies that just do whatever they want in your local area.
Mm. Yeah, like Auckland Transport and so on.
Yeah. Can you explain that a little bit about people? I'm not sure how many activists actually really do start digging into this and fully understanding it for themselves.
Mm. That's a very good question, because I think a lot of people get sort of caught up in their individual campaigns and things. So there's some people who are one campaign people and very passionate about it. And it's just a matter of linking all of those things in to the one common theme, which is social injustice. And it's great that people get passionate about their one thing, but if we're not linked together in some way, in some kind of network, it's just like, as you said before, banging your head against a brick wall all the time. Because it's not cohesive.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying it's not cohesive, and how does it have the potential to grow if we're all doing our little things and not at least keeping up with what everyone else is doing in that realm?
I totally get what you're saying, man, because I'm doing talk radio in the US circuit kind of thing, and so many of my peers within that professional field, I used to watch their stuff back when I was a fanboy and doing this stuff, but now that I'm doing it, I have no idea what any of the rest of my colleagues are up to kind of thing. And at the same time, I realize that, you know, when we get together in big groups and things like that and share, you know, what have we learned this year? What have we learned that and that kind of thing? Everybody goes home with a geometric amount of knowledge. So, but what that means is it's the individual to the collective. So somebody defined this. It was the trivium. So first of all, you do your investigation. You learn the information. Second of all, you process that information in your head. You understand it. And third of all is the rhetoric stage where you start teaching that shit to others, right? It's the goal of everybody in fucking life. Learn something, understand it, fucking teach it, you know. It's the goal of an activist, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's how I've always tried to, I guess, in a way, exploit Facebook. I haven't had it as a friendship thing. I've always had it as a networking thing. And that has worked quite well for me, even though you have to play around with the algorithm and get past all the blocks that Facebook increasingly put on you. So that's why where my social media work has been directed, and a few pages like Neoliberalism Must Die and Protect Our Assets, Aotearoa, over the years. And so I've been plugging away. I don't spend a lot of money on it because that grates my gears. Sort of like using capitalism to help anti-capitalism. But occasionally I do promote something.
Hey, if it works.
Yeah, that's right. So I've boosted a couple of my pages promoting my Give a Little page. And there's also a comedy fundraiser coming up in February. I don't know if you've caught up with that.
That was actually the reason why you're on this thing. You know, just,
oh, okay. Yeah. So. Yeah, because that's on February 26th. And Brendan Lovegrove and another friend of mine who also set up the Give a Little for me have arranged that. And it's just amazing that, you know, quite prominent people are putting their time to gig at that show. It's blown me away.
Well, you know, it's again, it's called Social Kitty.
Yeah.
All right. So I've been doing this gig for 10 years. I've had 10,000 hours of interviews with activists that I've published online so that their voices don't ever get forgotten. Some of them aren't with us anymore, and the only record that they even exist on YouTube is on my channel now, right?
Yeah.
And this is done for the specific purpose of that. It needs to be done, and there ain't anybody else doing it. Sold it.
Yes.
You know.
True.
And you look at the green screen background behind me, ladies and gentlemen, on the screen there, and there's a shot of Auckland Harbour, and it's all beautiful and that kind of thing. That was my mate Mike donating his time. You see the programs and everything here. That was all done for free. That's from people donating their time to show me, to teach me, to give me the opportunity to trial it on their networks and everything like that. Every single logo, including the T-shirt that I'm wearing, was designed and put together and donated. This microphone belongs to one of those people who's not with us anymore, who was an activist who had over 40 things on the show. Same with these headphones. The screen that we're looking at, donors forked out for that. I remember everything that has been given to me.
Yes.
Everything.
And that's important, I think, because that's huge. Like you say, that social kitty that, you know, when you need it, comes out.
Yeah. Doing the right thing. But in terms of the actual issues themselves, what actually got you involved in social justice? Because a lot of activists, it often begins with a trauma, or at least it did for me, and then I tried to frickin' ignore the trauma and tried to work and make money, and that didn't frickin' work out, so here I am.
Yeah. I guess the kernel was in my nature. I was always interested from my teen years in injustice. And as I said, at uni, I got a bit involved with like student issues and things, but not really deeply, just helping out friends and stuff. But I guess that was always in me. And then getting a job with bad working conditions and pay, I'm not a confrontational person. So if someone else is doing it, I'll support them. But at my workplace, people were grumbling and saying things weren't right, what can we do? And so I thought, okay, something has to be done, so I'll do it. So if something has to be done, I can do it and do it. But I'm not always the first one to put up my hand and jump in with the megaphone and stuff.
What actually happened? I mean, you former union, I mean, explain the process.
Okay, the process was I researched, because at that time I didn't really know much about unions and how it all worked. So I looked up unions that were relevant to English language teaching, and there was only two. One was a public sector one, which cost a lot and didn't seem very active. And then Unite popped up, and they had mentioned on their website or something about language schools, that they helped language schools. So I ended up getting in touch, and it was with Mike Turing. And he came along to meet a few of us in a went across the road to Myers Park, because it was opposite Myers Park, and it was a group of about 8 or 10 of us to discuss what we're going to do. I called that meeting, and I'd already contacted Mike at that stage, so I presented what they said they could do for us, and then we agreed from then to have a meeting at a coffee shop, Columbus or somewhere like that, and he explained the process, and about 8 of us agreed to do it, so we're the original 8. Other people came on board later, and then instantly things started to improve. And then we had our first negotiation. The pay went up a lot. They extended the staff room, things like that. So it made a huge difference to that place. But the side effect of that is management isn't very happy with the organizer. So from then on, my teaching was called suspect, where it had been no problem before. So I was continually under investigation for poor teaching or student complaints.
Vengeance.
The side effect for me. But it was worth it. I'm glad I did it.
Well, it reminds me of this movie 10,000 BC, when he says that a man will draw a circle around him, and into that circle he'll put his friends and his family, and he'll protect them. But for some men, he has to draw a much larger circle that includes many, many more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Definitely.
This isn't an isolated phenomenon. I can't In fact, I was just thinking about this today. It's interesting that you bring that up, is that those people who put themselves out there for others, when it comes down to it, although they may improve the lives of others, it will never be without consequence for themselves. So essentially, it's a sacrifice, and I think at a certain point, you recognize that sacrifice can't be done without. Essentially, you don't actually have any choice anymore. It's like, actually, I have to lose this in order to do this. I don't.
Yeah, so I stayed at that workplace for 7 years because, you know, I don't like to pick a fight, but if someone picks a fight with me, I'm pretty stubborn. So in a lot of ways, I made life difficult for them as well.
Yeah. You want revenge on me for improving our working conditions, eh? Well, how are your working conditions going to feel like for the next 7 years while you're trying to investigate me? And I'm constantly fucking with you.
Yeah. And John Minto was in the room every other week because he was our rep at the time before he moved to Christchurch. So you're talking heavy hitting, so you're not giving them an easy time either.
It is good, you know, when people do stand together. And there was this great video online that talked about the first person to stand up at the music festival. Have you seen this video?
Not yet, no.
No. Well, okay, so there's a music festival, everybody's sitting down in the grass, okay, and there's one guy sitting there waving his arms around. Wah! Fucking hard, you know, he's going hard, mate. And there's this other dude sitting there next to him. He's looking up at him. What the f? And then somebody comes in from right behind him and starts dancing crazy writing. And the person right next to them is going, what the f? And then somebody comes from way behind and starts coming up and dancing. And all of a sudden, everybody, even the guys who were going, what the fuck, started to get up and going, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like sitting on the fence. Okay, yes. And I was talking to the guitarist from 8 Foot Sativa one time. We came up with a saying, and he says, in life, some people will choose good, and some people will choose evil, but most will simply choose to sit on the fence and see who comes out on top.
Yeah.
We are just trying to burn that fence down.
Yes. I like that. That resonates. Yeah. Allow evil to happen.
That's precisely it. How much are we willing to allow in our society? And I think it does have to affect you personally. You have to see the suffering around you before you're actually really motivated to do anything about it. I mean, pain is the great teacher. Don't let anybody tell you different, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening to the show and you think you're learning something and it's not causing you extraordinary pain, you have learned nothing.
If it's real, it's gotta hurt.
Yeah, fuck you. You just imagine how many goddamn neuroses I've got, you know, that I'm trying to work out through during the course of the show, interviewing people from all different walks of life who've, like, solved one problem in their life and one kind of psychological problem or whatever. I've sussed that one. On to the next million.
Yep, exactly. But it helps make you more resilient, I think, if you've got that nature anyway. Bit of stubbornness.
Yeah. Well, I was interviewing Dr. Sam Vaknin, and he, in 1996, created a book called Narcissism Revisited, Malignant Self-Love. And in it, he coined almost all the terms that people modernly use in psychology today to describe the different techniques of narcissism and that kind of thing. And these are quite scary people, some of them, all right, but there's a big spectrum. So there's benign over here and really bad over here. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? If you're not one of those really bad narcissists, you're actually a benign narcissist, because the research shows that everybody's got narcissistic tendencies.
Yes.
The difference being, some of us know how to keep a hold of them and make sure they don't get fucking out of control.
Yes. Self-awareness.
But it's also listening to others, isn't it? I don't know. I was talking to somebody the other day about his drinking.
Oh, yeah.
And he was drunk at the time, of course. And so it didn't go too well. So but even so, he recounted a story about how somebody else has been telling me about my drinking. You know, maybe we're right, bro. Maybe you should listen.
Yeah. Maybe one day.
Yeah. Well, you just wonder as well, if you're facing death, what causes do you wish you'd taken up? I don't know. I was driving down the road one day, and radio was broken, so I had to think. I was like, what do I want after I'm dead? Not what I want to accomplish in life, but what do I want to happen just after I've died, right? Mm-hmm. And I wanted somebody to come to my funeral who engaged in activism of some kind that wound up actually saving quite a lot of human lives. And they'd say, I was down in the dumps this one time, and I was in a real dark place, and there was this cunt, Vinnie Eastwood. He let me know about the lighter side of genocide, and that just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. And I got back out there, got me vigor back. And the next day, a guy who I'd had on the show a couple of times, who's written 7 books about the United Nations covert depopulation agenda, right? amazing guy. Been on 21 hunger strikes himself against various governments around the world, protested outside the Vatican, right? Mm-hmm. The next day, after that thought occurred to me in the car while I was on my way to get a 50 bag, this guy commented on my post saying that I was really down in the dumps and I thought about giving up what I was doing. But there was this guy over in the Eastwood, and he let me know about the lighter side of genocide, and now I've got the energy to do it again, right? And I was like, fuck! And I was actually pissed off about it, because I was like, god damn it! I wanted something really good to aspire to after death, and now I've already fucking accomplished it! What do I do now, you know? For fuck's sake! Just too successful for your own good, Vinny.
Yeah.
just like, oh, fuck, it's funny how shit like that happens, eh?
It is. Just when it's meant to.
So we'll get you some cannabis, mate. Introduce you to some Marky Herbert. Hopefully we'll suss that out for you. And maybe you can break the law and survive instead of following the law and getting fucking exterminated like the rest of us.
Yep, try and beat this bugger.
Yeah, that sounds absolutely ideal. So, ladies and gentlemen, the page is givealittle.co.nz/cause/hope-for-Alex. That's F-O-R, not the number.
Yes.
I was just going to make that very clear.
Yeah.
Now, this might seem morbid, but do you have any final words?
Well, for the interview, yes, I do. I guess, and the theme that we've been talking about, if you are a sort of person like I am and do a lot of your activism sort of online and alone, and then relying on people to pick up what you're doing, is don't give up, because this too will pass and you'll hook up with some people like Vinny here and things will happen. Just keep on going. If you need a rest, have a rest, but don't give up. Activism's important. We need more activists. We need a better society, whether it's through revolution or evolution. Whatever happens, the current system is not working for the general population, so change needs to happen, and that's because of people like us. I think that's it.
All right, Alex, thank you very much for joining us today. And also, we've got to make sure just before we go, there has to be a little bit of a promotion of that comedy event.
Yes.
So let me just go, Alex Puri.
Event Finder.
Comedy. And it should come up on Event Finder right there. There we go, eventfinder.co.nz 29. And we are showing that on the screen now for the viewing audience. Comedy fundraiser for Alex Puri at the Classic Comedy Camp. Did I say the Classic Comedy Camp? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Brendan will get you for that.
I'm fucking retarded. Okay, so the comedy fundraiser for Alex Ferry at the Classic Comedy Club, 321 Queen Street, CBD, Auckland, Tuesday, 26th of February 2019, from 7:30 till 10 p.m. You can buy tickets at eventfinder.co.nz. So, ladies and gentlemen, hopefully you can get on down there and enjoy that one as well. Well, now, as they say in Israel, without further ado, it's time for my self-promotional purposes, ladies and gentlemen, because I can assure you that sitting here using internet and power and drinking coffee and stuff like that, while cheap, it is not free. And it is very valuable. A lot of people, especially in Auckland rent. In fact, this was something I was just thinking about this morning, bro. All right.
Yep.
So in Auckland rents right now, it's legal to raise any your rent for pretty much any reason you want up to 2 times a year, so long as it's, you know, within the market rate or whatever. And my landlords have raised our rent every single year in the 5 year that we've been here. Now, I was just wondering, how many times have the wages of Aucklanders gone up? Now, do they go up once or twice a year? No? Oh, okay. No. So, the word predator class came to mind. The predator class. I mean, seriously, bro. That's what's going on. They're just going to squeeze us and squeeze us and squeeze us until there's no juice left, you know, and so something's got to be done. So in that vein, ladies and gentlemen, please give me money. There is the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's T-H-E, Vinny with a Y, and Eastwood, like, go ahead, make my news.com. Now, there are three options there, ladies and gentlemen. The first option is the old Kiwi Bank, for if you are a wonderful, fantastic New Zealander and you do want to start up a regular automatic payment to support your local independent media, who just don't give a fuck about regulations, frankly. The Kiwi Bank is on the homepage there. And also, if you are an international supporter or from New Zealand, regardless, and you want to support it monthly, Patreon, ladies and gentlemen, patreon.com/Vinny Eastwood. And lastly, there is PayPal options on the homepage there as well, if you want to start up a weekly, monthly, or just a wee one-off. Anything is valuable, ladies and gentlemen, depending on what the intention is behind it. The intention of the show, all right, why is Alex on the show? Is he famous? Is this show going to get me a hell of a lot of hits and so on and so forth? No, it's not. Why is he on the show? I saw a man who was sick who I could help, and he's on the show. That's why, ladies and gentlemen. It is not because of personal fucking gain. It is because it is the right thing to do. And if we want a better world, each of us must do the precise same thing. I have power. I have resources. I can give those to people. You have money. If you do, please send a little bit of it this way. It does not have to be a lot, but it means a lot, regardless. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for all your attention and help and support for either myself or for Alex. Check out his Give a Little page in the description. Other than that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for being loyal listeners. And even if you're a first-timer, you're pretty awesome as well. All right, thank you. All right. Thanks, Alex. Catch you later, brother.
Catch ya. Bye-bye.